Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Cullen Steele in studio. And Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. A little after 5:20, Cooper Perkins, who covers the USC Trojans for the Believe Podcast Network, will join us to talk about the Trojans. And, man, it's coming up really fast. And you heard Steve talk about it, but LSU kicks off the season opener this coming Sunday in Vegas, and you can start your game day with myself along with guest host Jeff Palermo. Herb's going to normally do it, but Herb, he got lucky. He didn't win the Powerball, but he got a lottery win. His wife won a ticket for two and all expenses paid to go to Vegas. So Herb was 88 and out the gate. He was ready to go to the game.
Is he going to the game still?
Yeah, he's okay. Going to the game.
Well, then he'll come back week two and he'll tell us all about it.
He'll be all freshened up. So at 2 o'clock, myself along with Jeff Palermo for our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show live from Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come on by and see us. You can watch the game there, size it up with us. Also talk a little bit of football with both of us. They have 16 surround sound TVs, the best drink specials, great place to hang out, talk LSU football, all thanks to the good folks at Map Construction. Map built, Bill Beyond. And then at 4:30, it's LSU's official pregame show. You can kick it off with Chris Blair. Also at 6:30, LSU USC. We've been waiting for this for quite some time. This coming Sunday, and you can listen to the game live right here on the Big 870 and streaming live on the free Odyssey app. A number of people who attended the Saints practice sessions today, and Mike Triplett from New Orleans Pro Football is reporting that great news for the Saints in that Marshawn Lattimore, Kool-Aid McKinstry, wide receivers Rashid Shaheed, and rookie wide receiver Mason Tipton all back participating throughout the portion of practice open to the media. So, Cullen, Marshawn Lattimore, Kool-Aid, Rashid, and Tipton all back for the early portion of practices today and about a week and a half from game day. But that's good news to hear Lattimore.
Yeah, especially.
Yeah, he's number one on that list that you want him out there, and certainly Rashid Shaheed to give you that 1-2 combination with Chris Olave.
I like hearing that Tipton's back, though. I don't know. Like, I remember a month ago I was talking with Charlie about this, and I was like, so far, my favorite – camp stories are Chase Young's surprising return, both timeline wise and how productive he's been. And then on the offensive side, Tipton, for the first 2 weeks of camp, he's the name I only heard his name. He was through and through the one everybody was raving about. It sucks we didn't get to see him at all in the preseason, but obviously, as we know, he did more than enough to kind of solidify that, you know, 53 spot as a UDFA of that's rare. That is rare.
And even rarer when you come out of Yale. Think of that.
Yeah, he's applying that.
They don't have a lot of guys coming out of Yale. Remember Calvin Hill years ago. He was a first-round pick from Yale. Cowboys picked him. But good news on that front for the Saints. And, man, these games against Carolina have been tight. You look over the last few years, they've been close games. Despite the fact Carolina, ain't nothing right to home to about. I mean, they haven't been a really good team. These games have been fairly close between the two of them. And so, sort of suspect the same thing will happen this time.
I hope not. I know that we got the lowest over-under of the week. I think it's like 40, yeah. I want to say. It's the lowest of the week. And, yeah, I think that's a lot of the fact that the Panthers are in the game. But not a lot of people outside of New Orleans aren't that high on New Orleans.
No. In fact, that line has dramatically dropped.
Has it really?
Has dropped. It was as close. We went one time and saw it as much as 6.
What is it now?
I think it's 4.5.
I think you might be right, which is terrible.
It's in that range.
That's not something you want to hear, especially, I mean, undoubtedly the worst team in the league. They're in the running for one of the worst teams in the league this year, though. You know, the Patriots might take the cake on that. And you don't, everybody, not even just Bobby, but Bobby's been, the loudest one about it. You cannot
lose that game. I don't care if you win by one.
No, A win's a win, regardless of how ugly it is.
Same thing with LSU.
You cannot come out the block stumbling. You have to win that first game. It's as much of a win as any other team in the league needs. There are, I think I mentioned previously that, like, you know, the Eagles might need a win. And, you know, small things like players like, the Falcons and 49ers or the Falcons and the Steelers with Arthur Smith, like, who's going to, you know, revenge game kind of deal. But there isn't a team that has more on their shoulders come week two. If you're looking back and you see an L on your schedule and not a W, then the New Orleans Saints facing the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, that LSU has not won a season opener since 2019.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Man, they ran a stretch for a long time with Saban and with Les. They had not lost a season opener, and then Wisconsin broke that one. And it was the same thing with non-conference opponents. Man, did they run a roll with that? And then it goes to show you kind of how life is, sort of balance the scales, that you haven't won a season opener since 2019. There's a lot of pressure on both coaches here. The kind of money they shelled out for Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly, you don't want to start off 0-1. And this ain't Florida State of 2023 here. You got to take care of business.
I think
this game will be close. I really think it'll be close again.
I don't think it will be, but maybe that's because everybody was saying, look, like Lincoln Riley, like your time in the sun is done. You've used up your 15 minutes of fame in conjunction with Caleb Williams, and it's nut up or shut up. You've got to do something now. And like it won't matter week 2.
His teams will score points.
It won't matter week 2 or week 3. He has to win this to come out strong.
Every team he's coached, when you look back at Oklahoma and USC, they've always been able to score. When you think about it, had you bet the over on USC the last 2 years, you wouldn't have won every game, but you'd have your home in Malibu. I mean, that defense was El Succo. I mean, it was bad. And they could score points with Caleb. And so that sort of kind of – how it goes with Lincoln, you know, he looking to try to tsunami you each and every time with offensive points, but his defenses have not been very good. And it doesn't matter if it was at OU or if it was at USC. They just haven't. And then they go across the city and grab the defensive coordinator from UCLA, try to fix things out. Now, if he could have brought Latu with him, he might have had a better chance at it. But a big game for both coaches. To answer one of the texters' question, were we able to keep Kabote? Yes, Jacob Kabote is on the Saints practice squad. So he cleared waivers and Saints signed him up, and he is on their practice squad. When we come back, we'll have on with us Cooper Perkins from the Believe Network covering the USC Trojans right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Cullen Steele in studio. We'll have Steve Geller join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. And on our talk and text line, we'll have on with us Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We'll have on with us Cooper Perkins from the Believe Network covering the USC Trojans. Cooper, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Oh, we don't have him yet. Cullen's still trying to get Cooper, so we're still trying to get in touch with Cooper. But there are so many similarities between USC and LSU at similar times in the road. They both have made changes at the defensive coordinator position, bringing in new people. Now, one thing with USC, man, they brought in a ton of transfer people, 7 guys that will either be starters or be in the rotation as starters off an 11-man crew on the defensive side of the football. So there's a lot of movement there at Southern Cal. They do bring back Miller Moss. We all saw him in the bowl game against Louisville, in which he was terrific. 6 touchdown passes in a big win, 43-28 over the Cardinals. And a lot of people thought Louisville was going to take it to them. No Caleb Williams. Their number 2 quarterback had decided he was leaving. He was going to transfer out. It gave Miller Moss that opportunity. Moss was looking at transferring out, to be honest with you, and he admitted it, that he was going to leave. So, but he had a great game, decided to stay, and so now he's the architect of the offense run by Lincoln Riley. And on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, we have on with us Cooper Perkins from the Believe Network covering the USC Trojans. Cooper, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Cooper, I was talking to Cullen about this, that the one thing with Coach, no matter where he's been, if he's been at Oklahoma and USC, his teams have scored points. That's a consistent. The other consistent is none of his defenses have really played very well at all. If it was at OU or certainly now the last couple of years at Southern Cal, go cross town to get De'Anton Lynn, who was at UCLA. Now, too bad he couldn't bring Latu with him. That would have really helped out. But if you see any significant changes there on the defensive side of football for Lincoln Riley and the Trojans this year?
You know, yeah, I think that the best way to put it is that it's been an entire change of Lincoln Riley's philosophy, and it's been an entire change of his behavior. It's one thing to say you're going to do things differently. It's one thing to say you're going to emphasize defense and you're going to play with defense in mind. It's an entirely different thing to fire your entire defensive staff and go out and hire guys who exclusively have had either defensive coordinator experience or head coaching experience, right? You look at the guys that they brought in, along with Danton Lynn, Matt Entz, the former head coach at North Dakota State, who is a sitting head coach for a team that was in the FCS Final Four last year. He's their linebackers coach right now. Doug Belk, who'd been a defensive coordinator at Houston, among other places, he's their defensive backs coach. Now, this has been a commitment, not just in practice, but in finance. The university put forward money to go out and hire the best coaches that they could. And so I think that the story will be different. Do I think they're going to have a top 15, top 30 defense? No, I don't. I think the first question is, can they tackle? Because as silly as it sounds, that's the bar you have to clear at USC. If you can tackle, all of a sudden your defense is better than it's been the last two seasons. But I do think things are going to be different. I think that there is a pure mentality change, and the behavior backs up what they've said for the last 8 months.
Tell everybody a little bit of the story about Miller Moss, because in late November, that was a lot of talk that Moss might be the one to leave. But then all of a sudden, because you knew Caleb was going to the NFL, your backup quarterback decides, got enough of this, I'm out. And Moss all of a sudden is thrown into the spotlight to be the starting quarterback, and did he light it up against Louisville?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think with Miller Moss, he has become a darling of USC fans in a way that few quarterbacks have in quite a long time, Caleb Williams included. You know, as much as we love Caleb for the success that he had and the awards that he won, at the end of the day, he was an Oklahoma Sooner as much as he was a USC Trojan, but that's not the case with Miller Moss. I mean, this is a kid that committed to USC and signed with them way back in the Clay Helton era. He's a fourth-year junior who's now, you know, not originally Lincoln Riley's guy, but has become Lincoln Riley's guy in time. And you saw what he's capable of functioning in this offense during the Holiday Bowl, right? He's not Caleb Williams. He does not have the ability to extend plays. He's not this guy that can do special things with his body. But he has a really special brain, a really special mind, and I think that was on display. He reads well. He understands what the offense wants to accomplish, and he understands what's being asked of him on any given play. So I expect him to be locked in mentally and make good choices. The question isn't going to be whether or not he plays well. It's going to be whether or not the offensive line plays well enough to give him time, to give the running game an opportunity to get rolling. But Miller Moss, he's a favorite. You know, he's been at USC for 4 years. He grew up in a USC family. I mean, this is a kid who grew up dreaming of being the quarterback at USC. And while it may have been an indirect path getting there, having to be a backup for two different quarterbacks and think about transferring at several different points, so Miller Moss has a couple times said this publicly that, you know, I didn't come to USC to be the quarterback at Duke. I didn't come to USC to be the quarterback at whatever fill-in-the-blank school. He came to USC to be the quarterback at USC, and he's going to have his opportunity to do so. And I think that, you know, regardless of what side you fall on, for fandom, right? Even if you're an LSU fan in this game and you're hoping that Miller Moss goes 0 for 45 and throws 18 interceptions, you have to appreciate this kid for being what college football historically has been and what it really isn't anymore, right? He's a kid that waited his turn, committed to a school, and made good on his word. So regardless of how it plays out, I think he's a kid that needs to be admired by college football fans because he's done things the old-fashioned way. He's not, you know, he's not a fair-weather kid. He's not there just for the opportunity. He's there for the totality of that experience.
Think about it, Cooper. They got both of them like that. You think about Garrett Nussmeier. He's the exact same way.
Right? Yeah.
Exact same way.
Absolutely.
And so both of them kind of stuck around when they had opportunities to leave and decided to stay. I talked to a couple LSU coaches, and I said, okay, who keeps you up at night? And the response was quick. Number one, okay, it's Zachariah Branch. As a receiver return man, if they're going to run him with the jet sweeps also, so that's the guy, the big play weapon that can change a game so quickly. You've watched him. Give us a little bit of a breakdown on Branch.
Zachariah Branch is the classic explosive speed guy, right? He's the guy that you give him a yard of space and he's going to run away from everyone on the field. But what's interesting is he's built kind of like Percy Harvin was back in his Florida days, where he's that fast guy, he's that explosive player, but there's a physicality about him. He's built, he's strong. I mean, watching Zachariah Branch work out without pads and you know, just in shorts, this is a guy that looks like he should be, you know, competing for a 185-pound Mr. Universe. I mean, this isn't just a slender, small kid. This is a player that has the full combination of explosiveness, of runaway from everybody's speed, and also the physicality to break tackles, to be tough to bring down. And what's interesting is he actually may end up being the third best wide receiver on this team. There are a handful of talented other sophomores that are very, very exciting as far as USC fans are concerned. But Zach Branch, of course, he's the kid that's going to get all the attention. He's the guy that you do have to stay up at night worrying about because he has those unteachable things. It's not just about running routes. It's not just about good hands. He has all of those physical traits that you covet in a playmaker, not just a receiver or a running back, but a guy you could put anywhere on the field and expect to make a play.
One of the guys on defense for USC, and I think people in the Southeast Conference are familiar with him a little bit because he was so highly recruited, Bear Alexander. I talked to a couple coaches that have coached him and been around him, and they were like, "You got all the talent in the world. Now, does he apply that talent?" And it's to get him to play hard from down to down. He's one of these kind of stock market guys. Every once in a while he makes a play, other times doesn't. I know at Georgia they were getting on him because he maybe didn't give them the greatest effort from snap to snap. You see some maturity in Bear, or are we looking at the same guy here?
I think that there may be some maturity developing, but I also think that with Bear, the data points we have to go on when we judge his effort are kind of complicated, right? Because as a freshman, he's playing at Georgia, probably wants more playing time than he's getting, and he is producing. So, of course, there's going to be that temptation to be frustrated maybe with the role that he had. And at times, you know, an 18-year-old has effort issues every now and then. But last year, what was so fascinating was I think they asked too much of Bear. I think they asked Bear essentially to be the first, second, and third line of the defense. I mean, if he's not disrupting on a given play, they weren't making a stop, you know, for before 7 or 8 yards. And so I think there was a frustration that developed, and, you know, reasonably so. When you're being asked of that much by a coaching staff that generally wasn't respected by the team in their own meeting rooms, by the fan base, anybody involved with USC football. I mean, that was a defensive coaching staff that had no allies outside of Lincoln Riley. I think that Bear Alexander became as frustrated as all of them. But at the end of the day, I don't think we know. I don't think we know exactly what we're going to see from him because, frankly, Lincoln Riley keeps things pretty protected, pretty, you know, behind closed doors. And, you know, a couple of us, you know, in the media do get to see a scrimmage before the season, but we're not allowed to report on what we see. So it's very difficult to communicate some of these points as far as where the team sits and where guys like Bear Alexander sit. But I think he's in a situation now where he has a defensive coach in D'Anton Lynn who is going to utilize him effectively as opposed to just using him as the guy all the time. I think there's going to be a little bit more flexibility in his role. And perhaps Bear Alexander is one of those guys that needs to be mentally engaged in order to stay physically engaged for every play.
I
Rather
agree with
than
that.
Feeling like he's going out there in a four-point stance every play, moving him around is going to ask him to be more mentally engaged. And we'll see if that translates to a little bit more physical effort. I don't know. I don't think Bear knows yet, but I'm sure this coaching staff hopes that if they keep his mental side engaged play to play, the physical stuff will follow.
Lincoln's had some really good teams, but when his teams have really been at the top level, they've been able to run the football and at least slow down the run. This year, what's the look on that in being able to run the football effectively? And I think some of that may be partial to what you got up front along your offensive line and stopping the run. Because no matter how we look at this game as pitch and catch, that fundamental set of being able to run the football, stop the run, is still always there.
You know, it's really interesting because Lincoln and this coaching staff made a gamble in the offseason. They looked at what they had in their own meeting rooms. They looked at what they had in the weight room. They looked at what they could work with on the roster as it was, and they decided not to go out and make moves for offensive linemen or defensive linemen in the transfer portal. They've taken a very high school-centric approach, especially on the offensive line, of taking developmental players who maybe come in at 260 pounds and need to put on 40 to 50 pounds of weight, or on the flip side, come in at 380 and need to drop 50 or 60. So it's a big question mark as to what that's going to look like this year. They made their decision to stick with their guys as opposed to seek reinforcements. And that could mean a couple of things. The first thing that tells us is they like what they have. Now, are they right to like what they have or not is a different question that I think will be answered on the field probably fairly quickly on Sunday night. And with that question in mind, how well can they run the ball? How well can they stop the run? There is not a soul on this earth that knows the answer to that question. If they're on the coaching staff at USC, a reporter watching practice, or a parent of a player, the honest truth is that that is the biggest question about this team that no one knows. All that we know is the coaching staff made a bet on the guys in the building and said, we like what we have. We think we can develop this in the next 8 months to be effective, to be advantageous to us in our matchups. We don't need to go out and add these pieces. You don't need to go get these guys out of the transfer portal because the funds are there. The NIL is there. If they want transfer portal guys, they can compete for them. They won't land all of them. But if USC is choosing not to pursue guys at the trenches, it's a very interesting decision on the part of Lincoln Riley and the rest of his coaching staff. So I don't know if it's even fair to be optimistic if you're a USC fan about their ability to run the ball and stop the run. I think the thing that Trojan fans and I think people in the building alike would like to see more of is a commitment to the run, even when it isn't effective. Lincoln Riley does have a tendency to become so pass-centric when the running game isn't being effective. And at times, the last couple of years, he's also departed from the run when it has been effective. And I think that's been a huge source of frustration. So the question becomes, what is Lincoln's philosophy in the run game this year? We know he's made significant changes to his viewpoints on defense and wholesale changes on that side of the ball. I expect him to attempt to run the ball more and have a stronger commitment to that because that kind of goes hand in hand with committing to your defense, right? You're playing a little bit more ball control and a little bit more field position centric football as opposed to throwing the ball, going three and out and putting your defense back on the field every, 2.5 minutes. So I expect them to commit to it for better or for worse. But at the end of the day, we don't know. We have no idea. We know what they chose in the offseason with their personnel. We know that Josh Henson has a pretty good track record developing offensive linemen, but they weren't very good last year. So how much optimism does it warrant? Your guess is as good as mine.
Cooper, one of the things is always take a look at a schedule, and people say, wait till they have to play those Big Ten teams in bad weather. Okay, this is what I look at the end of USC's schedule, and I'm taking it from late October all the way to the end. Away games, the home games, you play Rutgers on the 26th of October, November 16th, Nebraska, and then Notre Dame November 30th. The away games are November 3rd at Washington. Now, you know as well as I do, you know, never know what you're going to catch in Washington. My dad was in the service at Puget Sound. He said every day was different from the next. You could catch rain, windy weather. Sometimes you get some snow or sleet, whatever. And then you catch UCLA late. To me, if they can get out of that early schedule, and it's difficult because of the fact, you know, LSU and then at Michigan, you can maybe make a run at this late. The way the schedule kind of suits it out. And really none of those games, with the exception of Washington, could be a potential weather game.
That's spot on. It's 100% correct, and good on you for recognizing that, because I think that is a reality that has gone under-recognized and under-reported in the national narratives about USC. You know, strength of schedule-wise, they have a gauntlet to run through. You know, you've got LSU, you've got Michigan, you have Wisconsin, Penn State. I mean, you have some tough games there, but you also miss Ohio State and you also miss Oregon, who are arguably the two best teams in the Big Ten this year.
All right.
You know, you do not have to leave the West Coast, you know, after October 19th. They'll go play Maryland, and then they're going to come back to the West Coast and not go past Pasadena. You know, that's the farthest they're going to go, and that's 10 miles. So I think what it comes down to is how they perform in four or five games this year is going to make or break the season. And it starts on Sunday. I think this LSU game, while it is a conference game, may be more important than that Michigan game in week four, once they've already played Utah State, once they've already played LSU. Because while that's the Big Ten opener, that's in the big house against the reigning champ, Lincoln Riley needs to make a statement. And that statement needs to come right out of the gate against LSU. So I don't think they're going to hold anything back in that game. I think it would be foolish to do so, but any idea that they might consider doing something like that is patently ridiculous, because that game is going to set the tone for the entirety of the season. I think what's fascinating is this is going to be true most years in the Big Ten for USC, for UCLA. They're not going to be playing a whole lot of these tough weather games that I think people associate with the Big Ten. And that's going to be very helpful over time. You know, I think Oregon is impacted by it less because, you know, Eugene, Oregon is a pretty miserable weather town in its own right. It doesn't get all that cold, but it's constantly wet, and, you know, it makes for tough football. But these West Coast schools aren't going to have as many, you know, trips into the snow as I think everyone envisioned when this news broke, you know, a little over a year ago that the Big Ten move was happening. And it's going to make things really interesting. You know, there are some sleeper games on the USC schedule, even at home. Like that Nebraska game gets pretty scary on November 16th. Notre Dame's never an easy out, especially as a rival. But it certainly, to your point, helps shape the theme of the season that, after October 19th, they're planted on the West Coast and not going anywhere.
Cooper, thanks so much for joining us. One thing I'll tell you is it's like spring break here. So many people headed out to Vegas. It's whoop-de-doo time. Now, who don't want to go to Vegas, you know, from Louisiana, headed out there? So it'll be a semi-home field advantage for the Tigers if they all awake and ready to roll Sunday night.
I tell you what, making that trip out to Vegas, I hope you bring some sunscreen and a little fan to cool yourself off with, because Vegas this time of year is hotter than the sun, my friend.
Thank you, Cooper. Appreciate it, buddy.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. Be well.
All righty. Cooper Perkins, who covers the USC Trojans from the Believe podcast. Podcast Network. We'll be back with our triple option feature. Steve Geller will join us right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTeo along with Steve Geller and Cullen Steele. It's our triple option feature. Steve, you go first.
Guys, well, today put out was the average ticket prices to get into every NFL team's game this season. A little bit of surprise at the top. Number one, the Detroit Lions right now, $254 average to get into a game this year. Other than that, some of the big cities I know folks wouldn't be surprised by: Las Vegas Raiders, Philadelphia Eagles, San Francisco 49ers, Chicago Bears. Well, then at the bottom of that for your lowest average ticket prices, you got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, $71. After that, another NFC South team, Carolina, at $65. Arizona, then Jacksonville. And, well, way at the bottom of the list, the last team on there, your New Orleans Saints, have the cheapest average ticket price around the NFL at $43 to get into the Superdome this season. I guess a fall from grace, you could say, from where it used to be to get into the Superdome. I don't think we were ever one of the top gets ever in the NFL, but I would imagine that, you know, previously during the winning regimes, it would cost a lot more on SeatGeek and the other secondary markets to get into the Dome.
You know, I was telling this to Bob the other day. You know, they got a waiting list in Atlanta.
Right,
which is crazy. It's been the first time in 20 years.
I saw that the first time they ever sold out in a while.
And so, man, you don't think optimism is high? It is really high in Atlanta right now.
Right.
Cullen?
All righty, guys. I'm going to give everybody in Chicago some hardcore hope. The last six teams to finish with a preseason point differential of plus 60 have all made the playoffs, and two of those have made the Super Bowl. The Bears finished with plus 68. If you want to give those teams a look, it was the Ravens in 2019. They lost in the divisional round to the Titans. The Broncos in 2014 lost in the divisional round against the Colts. Then the Seahawks did it in the back-to-back years, 2013, which they won the Super Bowl against the Broncos. 2017 lost in the divisional against the Falcons. The Saints did it in 2009 when they won the Super Bowl against the Colts. And then the Bengals all the way back in 2006, in which they lost in the... Oh, maybe they didn't make it.
So those are last year's numbers for Chicago, obviously?
This is this year's. They finished this year's preseason. They finished with a plus 68 point differential.
So we're looking at preseason point differentials?
Cullen,
hey, man,
Cullen, you can waste your money on that.
I hate to tell you.
Don't think you can buy the house in Malibu like I told you.
The last six times, guys. I mean, come on. There got to be something there. I mean, I will say, they cut it off at 60. This was per CBS Sports. Yeah. They didn't look at 50 or 70. But I don't know about you guys, but I the conversation of, you know, a winning season in Chicago is
not
if they
a
make
winning
the playoffs.
Season.
A winning season is if they make the playoffs. I'm beginning to think that's possible.
It's possible to win.
I'm definitely
season.
Buying a winning season. Right?
I'm thinking it's possible.
The
Super
thing
Bowl,
about
Super Bowl
with Green Bay and Detroit in that same division.
My God.
And that's toughy. That's a toughie, but you know, it's happened before, some of the stranger things in the sports world. Let me answer a couple of text questions for my triple option. Had one ask, I think it's 8942, what about Samson Nakua? He did not make the Saints practice squad. And from 3402, did we claim any offensive linemen?
Not yet.
Nope. No offensive lineman will claim today. Again, the trade was for the defensive tackle with the Commanders, and you did make a waiver claim. Really, primarily, Keena is going to be a return man.
Right.
He's played a little bit of running back, and he's caught a few passes, but really you brought him in to help out your return game. And the really good news, and being reported by a lot of people that were at practice today, in particular what I read off from Mike Triplett on NewOrleans.football, was Kool-Aid McKinstry, Marshawn Lattimore, Rashid Shaheed, Mason Tipton, all practiced.
Wow, yeah, that's definitely a big positive.
That's
especially
a two
with Marshawn, because he's almost like a Kendra Miller, where we haven't seen him a while since training camp started.
Well, Kendra Miller, man, he's looking from binoculars from where he's at. He ain't close to being back out on the field. So that is good news for the Saints,
yeah,
especially with Lattimore and Rashid, because you need to have that speed element at wideout opposite Chris Olave. And I do know one thing. When Lattimore is healthy, man, He is one heck of a cornerback in this league.
I'm hoping his case was pretty much, oh, I'm banged up, I need to rest, and he was just saving himself for the regular season.
Hope so.
Hope so, right.
Hope so at this stage. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk in hour number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Steve Geller, Cullen Steele. Steve, tell us what's happening in you got Sound at 6 and then Jeff at 7, correct?
Yes, sir. Dennis Allen just spoke to the media at 5 o'clock. We'll play that for you. And also, 7 o'clock hour, get a recap on some of the Saints transactions with the sideline reporter Jeff Nowak.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break. On Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Steve Geller and Cullen Steele. It's our triple option feature. Steve, you go first.
Guys, well, today put out was the average ticket prices to get into every NFL team's game this season. A little bit of surprise at the top. Number one, the Detroit Lions right now, $254 average to get into a game this year. Other than that, some of the big cities I know folks wouldn't be surprised by, Las Vegas Raiders, Philadelphia Eagles, San Francisco 49ers, Chicago Bears. Well, then at the bottom of that for your lowest average ticket prices, you got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, $71. After that, another NFC South team, Carolina, at $65. Arizona, then Jacksonville. And, well, way at the bottom of the list, the last team on there, your New Orleans Saints, have the cheapest average ticket price around the NFL at $43 to get into the Superdome this season. I guess a fall from grace, you could say, from where it used to be to get into the Superdome. I don't think we were ever one of the top gets ever in the NFL, but I would imagine that, you know, previously during the winning regimes, it would cost a lot more on SeatGeek and the other secondary markets to get into the Dome.
You know, I was telling this to Bob the other day. You know, they got a waiting list in Atlanta.
Right,
it's been the
which
first time in 20 years.
I saw that the first time they ever sold out in a while.
And so, man, you don't think optimism is high? It is really high in Atlanta right now.
Right.
Cullen?
All righty, guys. I'm going to give everybody in Chicago some hardcore hope. The last six teams to finish with a preseason point differential of plus 60 have all made the playoffs, and two of those have made the Super Bowl. The Bears finished with plus 68. If you want to give those teams a look, it was the Ravens in 2019. They lost in the divisional round to the Titans. The Broncos in 2014 lost in the divisional round against the Colts. Then the Seahawks did in the back-to-back years 2013, which they won the Super Bowl against the Broncos. 2017 lost in the divisional against the Falcons. The Saints did it in 2009 when they won the Super Bowl against the Colts. And then the Bengals all the way back in 2006, in which they lost in the... Oh, maybe they didn't make it.
So those are last year's numbers for Chicago, obviously?
This is this year's. They finished this year's preseason. They finished with a plus 68 point differential.
So we're looking at preseason point differentials?
Cullen,
hey, man,
Cullen, you can waste your money on that. Don't think you can buy the house in Malibu like I told you.
The last six times, guys. I mean, come on. There got to be something there. I mean, I will say, they cut it off at 60. This was per CBS Sports. Yeah. They didn't look at 50 or 70. But I don't know about you guys, but I the conversation of, you know, a winning season in Chicago is
not
if they
a
make
winning
the playoffs.
Season.
A winning season is if they make the playoffs. I'm beginning to think that's possible.
It's possible to win.
I'm definitely
season.
Buying a winning season. Right?
I'm thinking it's possible.
The
Super
thing
Bowl,
about
Super Bowl
with Green Bay and Detroit in that same division.
My God.
And that's toughy. That's a toughie, but you know, it's happened before, some of the stranger things in the sports world. Let me answer a couple of text questions for my triple option. Had one ask, I think it's 8942, what about Samson Nakua? He did not make the Saints practice squad. And from 3402, did we claim any offensive linemen?
Not yet.
Nope. No offensive lineman will claim today. Again, the trade was for the defensive tackle with the Commanders, and you did make a waiver claim. Really, primarily, Keena is going to be a return man.
Right.
He's played a little bit of running back, and he's caught a few passes, but really you brought him in to help out your return game. And the really good news, and being reported by a lot of people that were at practice today, in particular what I read off from Mike Triplett on NewOrleans.football, was Kool-Aid McKinstry, Marshawn Lattimore, Rashid Shaheed, Mason Tipton, all practiced.
Wow, yeah, that's definitely a big positive. That's especially with Marshawn, because he's almost like a Kendra Miller, where we haven't seen him a while since training camp started.
Well, Kendra Miller, man, he's looking from binoculars from where he's at. He ain't close to being back out on the field. So that is good news for the Saints, yeah. Especially with Lattimore and Rashid, because you need to have that speed element at wideout opposite Chris Olave. And I do know one thing. When Lattimore is healthy, man, he is one heck of a cornerback in this league.
I'm hoping his case was pretty much, oh, I'm banged up, I need to rest, and he was just saving himself for the regular season.
Hope so.
Hope so, right.
Hope so at this stage. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk in hour number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Steve Geller, Cullen Steele. Steve, tell us what's happening in you got Sound at 6 and then Jeff at 7, correct?
Yes, sir. Dennis Allen just spoke to the media at 5 o'clock. We'll play that for you. And also, 7 o'clock hour, get a recap on some of the Saints transactions with the sideline reporter Jeff Nowak.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Steve Geller, Cullen Steele. Steve, tell us what's happening in you got Sound at 6 and then Jeff at 7, correct?
Yes, sir. Dennis Allen just spoke to the media at 5 o'clock. We'll play that for you. And also, 7 o'clock hour, get a recap on some of the Saints transactions with the sideline reporter Jeff Nowak.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.